Watchers International with Mae Brussel, who for over 17 years has investigated and exposed political conspiracies worldwide. World Watchers International originates at KLRB, Carmel, California. Here's Mae.
Good evening. I'm hearing this squeak of the earphones here. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. It's broadcast number 462, and it's October 12, 1980. Are you hearing this squeak on the air? I can't tell. It's in the earphones here. Trouble with the control panel. As usual, we sometimes have trouble.
Everything is fine and under control, and we'll get on with the broadcast. I'm going to discuss the election because it comes up in a month now, less than a month, and I've gone into various tapes, broadcasts on Jimmy Carter, the narcotic connections, a few in depth on Ronald Reagan. But the elections are just a process that happens every 4 years. It doesn't really shape America fundamentally the way it should be shaped because the candidates are handpicked by a select few that do not address themselves to what I personally consider the major issues during the election time, the things that they should be talking about. The choices this year are particularly dangerous and particularly pathetic. Dangerous because I've watched the career of Ronald Reagan and lived through the experiences of his being governor in California, and nobody opposing Ronald Reagan has addressed themselves to the problems that he presented to this state or that he will present to the nation. When a few thinking people come along, such as Woodrow Wilson or Franklin Roosevelt or Adlai Stevenson or John Kennedy, they're either poisoned or they're shot or they're given CIA heart attacks after lunch or they're blown up. They simply can't live, and there's no way that they can survive unless they oppose the Soviet Union and intend to make World War III against the Soviet Union. There are no peace candidates in the offing, and there never will be. And the tragedy is that these dogs, I can't call them men, they're dogs, are hell-bent on another destructive war. From a practical point of view, I prefer to think of the two major candidates, Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan. I think there is a difference between them and Jack Anderson. I'll have a few remarks to make, and not too much, in the weeks to come. There are decisions such as Supreme Court justices, opinions on health and safety, freedom of religion, control over your own body. And I have a list of 16 or 18 subjects that I think are important to the period that we're living in right now, and briefly can run down what each candidate will do towards these critical problems. They are critical problems, and I have no intention of telling you how to vote, not even people that I know very well, because I know that they don't take an opinion of anybody. Your mind is probably made up in advance right now who you're going to vote for. People aren't swayed by logic or reason or research or facts or guesses or opinions based upon reading a lot of material and a lot of books. You know what you want. So primarily this evening, because I'm asked, who am I going to vote for and what do I think is going to happen, I'm going to give you my opinion. I'm not going to tell you what to do, because realistically, you already know, I'm pretty sure, what you want to do. What are the issues? The campaign rhetoric out on the streets hits inflation, energy, employment, war preparedness, and strong military. Outside of that, they're not handling very many of the issues. Religion in school, Ronald Reagan is going for. But the real issues, the ones that I see, is making the headlines every day, the problems that confront the citizens of the United States or the citizens of the earth are not being spoken about, or they're not being asked the questions, at least from what I'm reading and hearing, radio, TV, and on the newspapers and the magazines. My version of the issues is different than the ones that I listed above. Inflation is difficult, but pumping money into weapons and debts, into the trillion of dollar debts, is ridiculous. The interest on the debts and the cost of wars is never discussed. They discuss going to World War III and new arms and new weapons and new gases, but never the total bankruptcy of this country after the wars that we've been in, or the bankruptcy of the world. because of the weapon systems that we've built. Unemployment can be solved. If you have a war, you could get rid of 60 or 70 million of your citizens. There'd be fewer jobs and less housing to worry about, less health to worry about. People that make wars don't worry about those people that go out to fight it. And that's one way to solve unemployment. As far as energy, the candidates talk about energy sources. When they get the war they want and they're edging towards it every day a little closer, the military will get the energy first, the planes, the boats, and we will be cut off from each other, but they will get the energy first. I feel that war against Russia is impossible. And when I'm asked the question, don't you think we should get stronger to confront Russia? My answer is that we are weak because we're weak internally, not for anything that Russia does. We're weak because of the way our system was set up, the rounding up of Indians into concentration camps, the importation of black slaves, the continuous political assassination of our leaders, putting in military dictatorships that require more police, using the atomic bomb when we didn't have to, killing our civil rights leaders, using agent provocateurs to supply narcotics throughout every city in the country, purposely inducing young people into prostitution, narcotics, and gambling, baiting them to waste money they don't have to get into debt. I think we are crumbling not because Russia is stronger than us, but that we're weaker than we ever were. We're giving in to the worst elements, a country run mainly by a lot of criminals, assassins, people that cover up assassinations. That's my view of the United States of America. In order to be strong in the world, we have to clean up our act. And I don't mean the fundamentalist church, a story of family and God. I mean just basic morality that has to do with justice and fairness, murders, drugs, pimps, pushing drugs into the high schools, the middle schools, even children, and letting the large drug dealers leave. The only arrests that are taking place as far as narcotics go are the homegrown marijuana crops, where they come in and take the small dealer that supplies the local neighborhood, it seems. That bravado image that the United States has that having weapons will make us strong, I do not believe will make us strong. I think, as I said, we're morally and spiritually bankrupt, and our population, our young people, are turned away. They're apathetic, and therefore they are given a new genocidal future hope, which is the space age, which is being pushed to them to go to space stations, to work, to take the minerals off the moon, get off the planet, as if the same people that pollute the planet aren't building the space stations. So the imagination of the young people is either to cop out totally, turn against everything around them and take the easy out, the marijuana, the cocaine, the dope, or just loaf around unmotivated, totally unmotivated, or those that are athletic or into jogging or sports, keep them active with their athletics, or go to the moon, or a combination. That's about what is available for the youth. As far as an independent vote, I get calls. I got one this morning from somebody in Sacramento. He says, I can't vote for any of the candidates because they're members of the Trilateral Commission. Jimmy Carter, the incumbent, is a member of David Rockefeller's Trilateral Commission. John Anderson is a member of the commission. And George Bush, as vice president under Ronald Reagan, is a member of the Trilateral Commission. Therefore, I will vote for Mr. Clark or Barry Commoner because I don't want a trilateral. Well, my answer to that logic is that any vote for an independent is a vote for Ronald Reagan. If you take your vote away from Jimmy Carter, it's okay to do it. I'm not telling you not to, but any vote for the independent is a vote for Ronald Reagan for sure. Another thing is that Ronald Reagan is 70 years old when he gets into office. Every 20 years with the number zero in it, that person dies in office. So there are already discussions about his old age or the fact that nobody survives that year when it has a zero in it. And that leaves George Bush a trilateralist. So if you're voting independent, you're putting in Reagan and you end up with Bush. So there's no escaping the Trilateral Commission if that's what you want. And if you don't like Bush, you better do a little research, or if you don't know anything about him, read about his being an officer of the Republican Campaign Committee at the time of Watergate, his being director of the CIA when Allende was killed in Chile, his ignoring the scandals of the Central Intelligence Agency, the assassination squads, ambassador to China, getting China psychologically ready as they state now that they're ready for World War III or that War III is inevitable, and getting China prepared to be armed by the United States. Bush left the groundwork for that billion people to be armed and supplied with weapons, and all hell will break loose when that happens. So a vote for independent is giving Reagan the vote, and when Reagan's in, he can be offed, and there goes Bush. Also, a lot of people think if I vote for an independent candidate, I'm exerting my individuality. I don't like either of the major candidates, therefore I'm saying I'm an individual. That's a bunch of BS. It doesn't work that way. You're giving it to Wall Street firms either way. You have choices. If you give it to Ronald Reagan by voting independent, the vice president then was turned down as governor of Texas, as a senator from Texas. They didn't want him in his own state. He was accepted by the intelligence community, and that's what you get. That isn't a free choice. It's about identical to having your driver's license expire, and you say, well, I'm going to go in on Monday or I'm going to go in on Thursday. The choices have to be made one way or the other, and you really don't have free choices in this case when you go for the independent. My view of John Anderson is different than a lot of you. A lot of you like him. I think he's a total flake. I haven't mentioned him on any of the programs until now. He could have stayed in the Republican Party if he wanted any kind of changes of a liberal sort, but until the elections came, Anderson was never even considered a liberal. People have researched quotations of Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan, and they go into the past for every little crumb they threw out. How come people don't go into the past of John Anderson? How did he just wake up in 1980 and become a liberal? He was put into power as a member of the Trilateral by David Rockefeller. He's part of that Bilderberg or Rockefeller New York establishment elite. John Anderson always has been. He was gung-ho in Congress during the Vietnam War. He's this year's Eugene McCarthy. McCarthy was described in the book Who's Who in the CIA as being a member of the intelligence community. And in the past elections, he would surface with his flower power and take votes away from Democrats. That's how Richard Nixon got in power in 1968, was that Eugene McCarthy was traveling around the country putting blue daisies on Volkswagen cars and telling them that represented peace and love, while they put in the man that was to bomb Cambodia and Laos and Vietnam. Why are the trilateralists angry at Jimmy Carter at this time? I've mentioned it at other times in other broadcasts. Why would they put George Bush in as vice president under Reagan, knowing that old goat will expire or pass out, or push John Anderson against Carter? Well, Carter didn't do everything they wanted for them. He was a naughty boy. He let Somoza out of Nicaragua and the Shah out of Iran, and he didn't send in troops to protect those countries. And these nations have big investments in those countries, in banking investments and weapon investments, and also in the Middle East. The power structure is there to hold its profits and to supply strong police and torture and dictatorships, and they're not there to let their boys be eased out of office, and the Shah and Somoza are now dead. So Jimmy Carter went against the policies of his bosses in that respect, if for nothing else. He also did some other no-nos, such as indicting Carlos Marchell of organized crime and Irv Davidson of the Pentagon of the National Security Agency, and set up ABSCAM for 90 separate investigations of labor and corporate and congressional links to mob and organized crime. So while Jimmy Carter is pretty bad, he did do quite a few things that were off the record from what Chase Manhattan and the huge multinational corporations want. In 1970, going back 10 years ago, John Anderson was in the House of Representatives, and he gave a speech about the radical liberals. He said, in quotes, They were suddenly scrambling to get on their record that they were hardline advocates of law and order. Some of our greatest advocates of civil license have suddenly seen political light. There's a list of quotations of John Anderson's Anthony Lewis had in the New York Times this last week. He was praising the law and order under Richard Nixon and John Mitchell and thinking that the radical liberals getting on the law and order issue were seeing the light. In 1964, he entered into the congressional record praise for a man, Representative Ralph Bierman from Nebraska. Bierman got on the congressional record on the floor of Congress and denounced the appointment of law professor Norman Redlich to the Warren Commission to investigate the president of John Kennedy. He said Redlich was engaged in a communist front activities and he shouldn't be on the Warren Commission. The truth is, Redlich, who's now dean of law at New York University Law School, is the most conservative person you can imagine in the world, and everyone on the Warren Commission, according to the minutes of the commission, were members of the Central Intelligence Agency, the secretaries, the staff, and so forth. But Anderson praised the Congress from Nebraska for denouncing Redlich for being a red when he was so far right, and later he apologized. He said that he wasn't putting aspersions on Norman Redlich, but he was praising the right of this other representative to speak up and speak his piece if he thought Redlich was a redneck or associated with communist fronts, which he wasn't. At the time of the civil rights strife in the South in 1963, when Meredith was trying to get into a university and the blacks were trying to educate it in the South, John Anderson inserted in the congressional record a letter published in Oregon, Illinois, saying, in quotes, "The Southern Negro is 50 to 100 years behind the white community, and with rare exception, almost totally unprepared for equality. Education should be tried," this minister from Illinois wrote, an Anderson buddy, I guess. But he said the Negro, by and large, is supinely indifferent to education. Anderson thought that this was so impressive that he had this entered into the congressional record as part of his attitude towards blacks and getting their schooling in 1963. He just said a short while ago on the campaign trail that if he had a chance, he would vote again for the Gulf of Tonkin, the measure that increased the war in Southeast Asia and later admittedly was a fluke that the radar had been picked up of our own equipment on the boat and the escalation of the war wasn't necessary. He still doesn't know that evidently in 1970. And when President Nixon ordered the invasion of Cambodia in 1970, Anderson defended the president August 5th, 1970, and he thought it was a great thing to go in and bomb Cambodia at that time. And he felt that the heat should be applied, against Cambodia. He also praised J. Edgar Hoover on his 40th birthday as director of the FBI. And he said, in quotes, "At this time in our history, when a tide of humanistic secularism seems to be sweeping over America, it is immensely reassuring to find the figure of Mr. Hoover, with his prestige and authority, standing squarely as only a Christian America can continue to survive storms buffeting the world." Only Christian America can stand up against the storms, and he praised J. Edgar Hoover, who was a outright Christian, a good Christian, when we had humanistic secularism. So if you want Anderson, I'm not telling you not to vote him. You vote for him, you get Reagan. So if you get Reagan, that's what you deserve. I say that every week, and if people don't wake up to that, then they have to live with it later. Just don't come and cry about Ronald Reagan later, because any vote away from Jimmy Carter, unfortunately, is giving it to Ronald Reagan. Senator Lowell Weicker in Hartford, Connecticut, Republican from Connecticut, said he would campaign for Ronald Reagan for president of the United States, even though he considers the party platform is a disgrace. And he said he thought that George Bush was a liar and a hypocrite, so he wouldn't campaign for Bush. Weicker, rather, was on the Senate Watergate Committee. He said he didn't like Ronald Reagan. He differed with him on the major issues and so forth, but he has integrity, and he says he has no use for Bush, Republican National Chairman in the Watergate scandal. A vote for Reagan, for Senator Wiger, is a vote for Bush. If he thinks Bush is a liar and a hypocrite and he doesn't like anything on the Republican platform because it's a disgrace, there's no obligation for him to vote at all, but he's going to vote for Ronald Reagan. As I said before, I've listed my priorities of what I consider to be important in an election year or not in an election year. What will they do when the election is over and you have 4 years of these characters? I look at the newspaper and think of what I see in the newspaper and how they dress themselves to these problems. The first problem I listed, and these aren't in any special order, but I listed for you what I consider the major problems, and if I had Meet the Press or Face the Nation, I would address each candidate to these problems, and one has to do with what are the chances of World War III. Ronald Reagan has a group that have been dedicated to the fact that they want World War III and have wanted it since 1918, the group from the Hoover Institute and the military behind Ronald Reagan. On the other hand, Jimmy Carter is fully supporting the Shah of Iran. He did over in Egypt and Sadat. He's very close to them, and the Shah's twin sister has put up a huge fortune of money to Iraq, and I believe that she can be instigating the problems in the Middle East at this time, which would give a chance to go into Iran and make war against Iran. She hopefully wants her nephew, the Shah's son, on the throne. The Carter administration with Turpin and Corcoran and Cummings hasn't been any different than past administrations were supplying the armies of Gaddafi and Idi Amin's Uganda and PLO. The CIA is funding the armies all over the Middle East and Southeast Asia and now want to send arms to China. So the chance of World War III, I think, would be more imminent with Ronald Reagan, and it would take a little longer under the Carter plans, the way he moves more cautiously and slowly. I think housing is a problem that I haven't heard the candidates address themselves. Can you own your home? Are you losing your home? Will you have a dwelling? Can you save enough through the system to pay rent or to put money down for a home? What are the chances of having homes to live in? Because the quality of life is what matters for all of us. You can't live in bomb shells or empty space rockets and missile silos. What are they building for people to live in while we defend ourselves or arm against Russia? The news media and the control of the news media is important. How open are the radio stations, the TV channels, magazines, books? I don't think there's much difference between if Carter were president or Ronald Reagan. I think that Wall Street controls the media at both ends and around the country, except for small independent stations such as KLRB and college stations, a handful of stations around the country. I don't think it would make much difference. In terms of education, is it going to be more elitist? How are the test scores screened? Who's screening out? What is the cost of education? We know that Ronald Reagan broke the back of the University of California, where they were to have free education for everyone out of high school in California, and that was cut off thanks to Reagan when he was governor those 8 years. Jimmy Carter is not outspoken one way or the other about education. I really can't say anything for or against his views on education. Ronald Reagan is for funding tax-free the Catholic schools, the religious schools, to educate the students there and give them a tax break. That means that the Christians are separated from the others and the white Christians are separated from the minorities, and the private schools will flourish and the elite system will continue as people pull their children into the private schools to keep them away from the masses. They do it here in Carmel. They do it in every major city around the country, and if they get tax breaks, you'll get more of it. What about medical control, the spread of diseases, and the genetic experiments that are going on? This week there was a revelation that genetic experiments are coming out of UCLA. They're doing them overseas. I've made allegations that they're linked to Jonestown. They're working with diseases of minorities, and I think that they're a threat to the safety of the United States, the DNA, the genetic experiments, and I haven't heard anybody ask the candidates on these subjects. When Jonestown came down, Jimmy Carter said, let's not overreact, and he didn't care about investigating if these people were under experiments of mind control or body experiments or genetic experiments. He simply ignored the issue and hushed it up, whereas Ronald Reagan set up the body at UCLA that was connected to Yale University that initially began the experiments on minorities. This school at Yale that's doing genetic work is working on sickle cell anemia, and I've been afraid for a long time that that Tay-Sachs, allegedly a Jewish disease, and sickle cell for the blacks would later be used for extermination purposes. And they admitted, as I say, it's not allowed in this country to do this kind of work. They admitted they're doing it overseas. How about mass mind control? In the hospitals, the Vacaville, the various institutions and prisons, and private homes, the kind of thing that Jim Jones was doing in the churches. Which president would use mind control the most? It got its start and its muscle heavily under the Ronald Reagan administration, and particularly California, that was the home of the mass violences and these assassins under the process of mind control. But we've seen it go east, and cases come up like David Berkowitz in New York City, the son of Sam, or the new diary that was found of Arthur Brammer's, and victims, assassination victims, who have been in the process of mind control, the murder of Alan Lowenstein, former congressman, by this Sweeney and Dennis Sweeney and Gene Harris, killing Dr. Tannauer in New York. So under Jimmy Carter's administration, he hasn't done a thing to get to the bottom of any of these murders. I'm just mentioning a few. I have a list of about 40 or 50 where Jimmy Carter just ignores them. Ronald Reagan was behind them, and that makes a big difference. And I want to do a little more, if I have time, on Dr. Delgado and UCLA and the mind control. How about transportation costs, the fuel? Jimmy Carter released the lid on oil, so the oil profits went up. That's the one way he served his masters well. The fuel situation, the many oil people, of course, are behind Ronald Reagan, the Murchisons and John Connolly and Bush from Texas and Buckley, and there's many, many oil firms and oil families. I haven't had any reason to believe that the price of energy won't keep going up, that the same multinationals and military that gobble up the oil and allow the oil prices to rise will not be generous with us on the oil, and we finally need alternate sources of energy, whether it's solar or the alcohol or gasohol. It'll go to the hands of the monopolies to develop also. How about narcotics and organized crime? How do the candidates relate to the importation of heroin and cocaine and marijuana? Well, that problem has increased about 40% since Jimmy Carter was president. He's allowed narcotics to come in from Colombia and Bolivia, even though he's not recognizing Bolivia at the time. They pour into Miami, and on the one hand, he has the Abscam arrest for a handful of dealers, but the 33 informers in the New Mexico jail who could really lead muscle to arrests of narcotic dealers was allowed to take place. They were murdered, and the president has never said a word about the investigation into New Mexico. Nobody was punished, and obviously no one was fired, probably moved around or shifted a little. So as far as the organized crime and narcotics, Jimmy Carter's family has strong links to crime figures. Ruth Stapleton to a fellow down in San Luis Obispo who was investigated. Billy Carter to the Middle East narcotics combinations. The Vesco connections in Panama, and with not only with Billy Carter, but with the White House administration, Ham Jordan with Torrijo. The organized crime is in. The mob seems to control both candidates. I'm going to take a break now for 60 seconds or so, and then on the second half, we'll go into some of what I consider the issues and how the candidates don't even address them.